Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. If you like dragons and morally gray characters, you'll want to listen to today's story, which explores that significant moment in a young man's life when he can choose to become the hero or the villain. It's written by T.E. Bradford, who's written several award-winning short stories, novellas, and books. Her speculative stories explore the wonder of the universe and display the beauty of a grand design. She kicks up her feet in central New York, where she braves the long winters with her adorable schnoodle pupper, the husband she knows was created just for her, and the son who is her forever best story. Today's narrator is Peter Franson, host of Christian Geek Central. Stick around at the end or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from both Tracy and Peter, as well as how to enter our newest giveaway featuring books by Finding Fantasy Reads authors. For now, please enjoy The Dragon Between Worlds by T.E. Bradford.
Chapter 1.
He's a devil.
He's a maester, and just what the boy needs, training and discipline.
I don't like it. The others won't go near him. It's no wonder he has no servants or acolytes.
He's willing to pay, which is more than can be said of any others. Besides, he drained his mug, banging it down onto the table. What other offers have we gotten? In his hidden spot, crouched on the grass outside the window, Cyril's hands balled into fists. He knew his father thought he was a failure. In spite of doing his best in all of his classes, none of the maesters had taken him as an acolyte. He wondered which one it was his father spoke of.
They whisper that he calls on the dark magic.
There was a beat of silence. The wagging tongues of cleaning women.
Who have seen what is kept in the dark.
Enough! The roar made Cyril flinch, even though he was safely out of sight. You'll keep your tongue! The pounding footsteps that accompanied the growl filled in the scene well enough. His father would be looming over his mother, eyes red and face dark. His mother would be looking to one side. She knew better than to look him in the eye.
I will not have you filling this house with gossip and lies.
A fist landed on something, likely the counter.
He's offered to take the boy, and I've accepted. There'll be no more discussion on the matter.
Cyril felt a mix of fear and excitement fill him.
Besides, it'll do the boy good to be out from under your wings. You've coddled him long enough.
Footsteps, this time moving away, meant the tirade would not escalate, at least for now. He let out a breath of relief. Then soft sounds reached his ears. His mother was crying. He started to stand up, to go and comfort her, but stopped. His father thought he was too soft, that he needed to be more of a man. Maybe his mother did coddle him. Was that why none of the maesters had wanted him? He felt guilty for thinking such thoughts about his mother. She had always been good to him. She'd tried to keep the worst of his father's anger away from him when she could. But when she cried, he felt strange inside. His father hated crying. That was why his mother did it only when he wasn't there to see. She hid her tears from his father. He wished she hid it from him, too. It made her seem weak. Maybe she was making him weak, too. He backed away quietly, careful not to step on any twigs or branches that might betray his presence. When he was far enough away from the house, he turned and ran. The feel of the grass whipping at his legs, of the air buffeting his face, soothed him. He ran until his legs felt unsteady and his lungs burned. When he could go no farther, he collapsed onto the ground, letting the grass and dirt cool him. He rolled onto his back and looked up into the sky. Clouds turned into shapes as he watched them. A pig shifted into a lion, a duck into an eagle. These are omens, he decided. I will become something powerful, something great. I will show them who I am. Whoever this maester is, I will stand beside him and learn all that he knows and more. I will be the best acolyte they have ever known, and then I will become a maester too. The greatest ever.
They whisper that he calls on the dark magic,
he recalled his mother's voice in his head. The idea of it sent a thrill through him. What did it mean, dark magic? What did it do? Could it call up demons and devils? Destroy cities? His father was probably right. It was all just gossip from old women. Even as a student, he constantly heard them chattering in the kitchens and in the halls. Most of the time, it was just silly prattle about this couple or that leader or something they'd seen or heard. He'd never paid it much mind. Above him, a cloud that looked like a lizard elongated, growing a great head and a roaring mouth. A dragon. He wondered if dragons had dark magic or not. Did they even exist? The old books at school said they had once, but that was long ago. Now they were just legends and dust. He sat up, plucking a stone out of the grass and throwing it as far as he could. Who cared what kind of magic the Maester practiced? Either way, it was power, and that was something that could be learned. He would go, and he would be a good acolyte. He would learn, and if the Maester did have some dark power, Cyril would find a way to have it too. Chapter 2. The wagon rocked as it rolled over the old dirt track. In the bed, two small crates contained all of Cyril's clothes, along with his sturdy boots. He'd tucked his one and only prized possession into a sock at the bottom so that his father wouldn't find it. He would disapprove. "You remember to do good work for the Maester," his father said, looking over at him with eyes that were such a light shade of blue they looked almost like the ice that formed on the river in winter. "He's paid good money."
"Yes, sir."
"Your mother fill your head with idle gossip, boy?" He shook his head, no. She hadn't, not really. He'd only heard it because he was listening in. That was a much graver offense, and one he wasn't about to disclose. "Good." His father looked forward again. "She's not like us, boy." He wasn't sure what his father meant, but kept quiet. It was always best not to say anything when he wasn't sure what would make his father mad. "Some folks frown on destructive," he went on. "Like it's not as good as creative or neutral. But that's far from the truth." He glanced over at his son again, and Cyril saw something he'd never seen in his father's eyes before. Excitement. "You may not understand now, but you will. Destructive can do things others can't. You watch the Maester and watch well. If you're careful, you may find there are things you can learn that will serve you in ways you never imagined." Cyril had seen a lot of looks on his father's face, but the one he saw next was the most frightening. The sides of his face stretched into a feral grin, lips spread back to reveal teeth that were yellowed by time and drink. His eyes glittered. The effect was terrifying. As if the sun agreed, it went behind a cloud, casting a pall over the otherwise bright morning. Thankfully, the rest of the ride was mostly silent. They rode south, crossing the Casca River at a small bridge. As the sun neared its zenith, the heat reflecting off the ground in waves, they crested a ridge above a small valley. There was only one building, but the sight of it brought both of them to a halt as the horses shied nervously. Made entirely of rock, it looked as if the earth had buckled upward, spewing out the foundation beneath it, erupting into the sky in razor-tipped fingers and jumbled deformities. "What Maester is this?" His father flicked the traces several times before the horses were convinced to keep moving, dancing nervously down the slope toward the monstrosity. When they reached the bottom of the hill, the horses refused to go any farther, rearing up when lashed. They were not willing to get any closer to the unnatural place that loomed ahead. Swearing softly, his father set the brake and jumped down. "We'll walk from here." Each of them carried one of the crates. In spite of the heat of the sun and the weight of their burden, Cyril felt chilled. When they passed into the shadow of the rock, his fingers went cold. Up close, the rock looked even more bizarre, mottled and whorled as if melted and somehow re-solidified. The front door was a solid slab of wood that looked thicker than most trees. He stared at it, his mouth hanging open, as a voice from inside beckoned them to enter. "Master Griven," his father said with a curt nod of the head.
"Griven?"
Cyril had never heard of him.
"Come!"
The voice emanated from the shadows at the back of the room. His father set the crate down to one side of the door, so Cyril followed his lead. The enormity of the space became apparent as their eyes adjusted to the darkness. It was a cavern, somehow above ground. Glittering geodes in a dozen colors reflected from the ceiling that soared overhead. It was an impressive sight.
Bring him here.
His father turned to him and waved a hand.
Go on, then.
Cyril took a few hesitant steps, his feet freezing as a tall, dark shadow separated from the darkness and glided toward him. The maester's eyes were the same color as the rock. He had no hair. Instead, designs covered his scalp, the pigment of them a deep reddish-brown. Cyril watched, mesmerized and horrified, as a skeletal hand reached out to grip his left shoulder. The fingers were surprisingly strong, pressing into his skin, but he never had a chance to register the discomfort. Immediately on contact, his head exploded with pain. Crawling, slithering worms seemed to be invading his brain, tearing into it. His mouth opened to scream. Griven dropped his hand, and the sensation stopped as quickly as it had begun. The pain in Cyril's head evaporated. The maester turned to Cyril's father.
He'll do.
Cyril blinked, a wave of nausea rolling through him. Griven held out a small bag. His father took it with another nod, then turned to go. Cyril watched, eyes wide, as his father headed for the door. Whatever this man was, whatever this place, he would be staying here. He would not be going home to his mother, or his bed, or the fields of tall grasses on the plains. At the last moment, his father stopped and looked back at him. Cyril fought the urge to run, his body trembling.
Learn,
his father said, as if that one word conveyed all that was needed. Then he was gone, and the door swung home, taking the light of the outside world with it, leaving Cyril trapped inside the great tomb of rock. Chapter 3. It was the roar that woke him. Griven had picked up one of the crates with those oddly strong skeletal hands and led him along a passage more like a cave than a hallway. It curved gently back and forth, the walls pitted and uneven. They passed several small openings before reaching the other end. There, the passage opened into a small room. A bed pressed against the far wall under the only window Cyril had seen. At the foot of the bed was a trunk made of some rich, burled wood. Along the left wall there was a table with several books stacked on top, and in the opposite wall there was a fireplace, fire already burning. It felt strangely soothing in the chill rock structure that was cold in spite of the heat outside. Cyril was surprised. It was much nicer than his room at home. Of course, Griven was a maester, strange or not. It made sense that he had more comforts, but when Cyril had seen the strange rock building, he had assumed the worst. He would be living in a dungeon. This room was no dungeon. Griven placed the crate beside the trunk. The back of the man's neck, Cyril noticed, had the same strange markings as his head. They traveled down his skin and disappeared into the dark cloth of his shirt. Cyril wondered how far down they went.
You may store your belongings here, the maester said, indicating the trunk. Since you've had a long journey, I will let you rest. I will come and get you when it's time to eat. We will begin work tomorrow.
Cyril found his tongue rather stuck in his mouth, so he just nodded. The maester turned to go, and Cyril found himself thinking that perhaps his strange appearance was not so frightening after all. It was Cyril's imaginings that had him fretting, not the man himself. Yet as the man passed by and those skeletal hands came into view, a shiver pressed through him. Griven may not be frightening, but he was certainly powerful, perhaps the most powerful maester Cyril had ever met. Once the boy was alone, he set to exploring the room more thoroughly. He put the crates into the trunk unpacked. It was large enough to fit a third alongside if he'd had one. Then he turned to the table and the books. There were several written in a language he didn't recognize. These he piled to one side. The others contained histories of plants, beasts, even legends and prophecies. One in particular drew his eye. On the cover was a serpentine form with a large spiked head sporting a mouth lined with flame and filled with teeth. The coiling body circled behind, firelight dancing from the skin and glowing between the scales like lava as it circled and looped around to a pointed tail that curved into its mouth. A dragon. Cyril had dreamed of dragons since he had been old enough to know what they were. His mother had taught him a song once about a dragon.
"Don't let your father hear you sing it," she'd cautioned. "Keep it in your head and heart."
He had committed it to memory and only hummed the tune when he was alone, or when the lashes of storms thundered around their house, drowning out most other sounds. It was a song of power, and it soothed him. The drawing on the book's cover was better than anything he'd ever seen before. The dragon looked real, its scales smooth and glossy. Even its eye seemed to be looking outward, filled with wildness. He ran his fingers over it, feeling the ridges and dips. There was an odd, tingling sensation, and he gasped. It felt as if the lines were moving. He jerked his hand away, eyes wide, breath caught in his throat. The picture looked just as it had. Illusion. Hesitantly, he put one finger back, just grazing the lines. There! The tail moved. That was no illusion. Cyril backed away from the table, his heart pounding. He licked his lips. Was it a trick? Some kind of magic? How could a drawing move? The backs of his legs hit the edge of the table, and he sat down with a puff of breath. This place was so odd, yet so strangely exciting. Perhaps his father had been right. The Maester was obviously powerful. He must have extraordinary magic here. All Cyril had to do was watch and listen and absorb all that he could. Sighing, he lay back on the bed. The light from the window drew his eyes. Outside, the sky was a flawless, sparkling blue, the blue of summer. Lazy bits of cloud floated across it. As was his habit, he let himself see images in them. He drifted to sleep, soothed by the familiar game. When he jerked awake, it was later in the day. The shadows were long, and the afternoon light hit his eyes, making him squint. A loud roar shook the bed. It was like nothing he'd ever heard. It was like screaming thunder. His first thought was that he was still dreaming, but then two of the books that had been too close to the edge fell off the table, thumping to the floor. Cyril jumped out of bed, trying to orient himself. Beneath him, the floor vibrated. Then the roaring ceased, and all was still. He waited for a moment before walking to the doorway and sticking his head out. "Maester Griffin?" There was no answer. He stepped into the hallway. It was much darker than it had been earlier. He put a hand on the wall to keep from bumping it, and slowly traced the curves back to the front room. It was empty. The fire had burned low. It was apparent that, wherever the Maester was, he had not been here recently. Perhaps he was sleeping too. Could he have slept through that noise? It didn't seem likely, but perhaps it was familiar to him. It could be a machine of some kind that just seemed like a roar. The idea that it was nothing, that he was jumping at shadows like a boy half his age, gave him pause. What would the Maester say if he found him here, trembling and wide-eyed? "Be a man about it," his father's voice echoed in his head. Taking a deep breath, he started back toward his room. He was halfway down the winding hall when another roar shook the stone. Dust and grit settled on his shoulders, dispelling any thought that it was just part of a dream. He placed his hands on the wall, feeling the rumble like an earthquake beneath his palms. The sound echoed and rang for nearly a full minute before subsiding. A blast of hot air surged over him. Ahead, he could see the dim light from his room and the window. Around him, the hall was darker, but not completely black. Light was coming from somewhere else, he realized. He looked back over his shoulder. There. One of the openings he'd passed seemed to glow. A reddish light flickered, making shadows dance just inside. Mustering his courage, he walked to the opening and peered inside. The stone floor curved to the left, then sloped downward. Heat poured out as if there were ovens down below. Perhaps there were. Maybe in this odd house, the kitchens were in the basement. "Hello? Maester Griffin?" His voice echoed back as if mocking him. "Coddled boy," it whispered in his brain, afraid of the dark like a babe. His hands curled into fists. He was no babe. He pressed his lips together and stepped into the corridor. It wound slowly but steadily down, yet the temperature continued to rise. Sweat rolled down his face and sides. His shirt stuck to his back. He had gone far enough that any light from the hall would not reach. Yet he could see. The light was coming from below. So was the heat. Doubt worked at him. What if the strange stone had been pulled from the earth, and the corridor led to the fire-filled bowels where rock turned to liquid? Perhaps he should go back. His feet had already slowed when the loudest roar yet blasted. It hit him full in the chest like a lightning bolt, knocking him onto the floor. The air that washed over him was hot enough to singe his hair. His clothes began to smoke. Sweet divide, he was going to burn to death. The sound and the heat abated simultaneously. From his seat on the rock floor, he looked up behind him. He could still go back. He probably should go back. Ahead of him, the shadows took on a new life as they danced. He stood up, dusting himself off, and patting his clothes to make sure there was no flame. He was singed, but unharmed. At least the blast of air had dried his sweat. He licked his lips. There was little moisture left in them. Rubbing his face with his hands, he came to a decision. He couldn't turn back. Around the next bend, a dark opening rewarded his persistence. The shadowed cavity looked as cool as a deep pool of water, but instead was hot as a furnace. Slowly, his heart pounding against his ribs, he approached it and peered inside. Inside, the gloom and firelight revealed a cavern larger than the front room. It looked larger than even the whole house. It seemed impossible, yet there it was. Blackness danced along the edges in a rough circular shape. The walls were uneven, shaped by stalactites and stalagmites, but all of that was not what drew his eye. It was the beast at the center of the room. It was as tall as a tree. Its sleek, silver scales glowed red around the edges, as if molten lava flowed through its veins. Chest heaving, Cyril followed the graceful lines with his eyes. Up its studded back, around legs the size of boulders that ended in razor-tipped claws, and along the curved neck to its massive head. Its mouth was only slightly ajar, but flames licked from the sides. Its glowing eyes were locked on him. Even from across the room, he could feel its gaze. It penetrated him, laying him bare. There could be no secret, he knew, from the beast. A shape moved near its feet, startling him. A man dressed only in pants, his torso bare, stood before the great dragon. His back was covered in symbols that glowed in the firelight. No, not symbols. Spell forms. Maester Griven. As if drawn by Cyril's thoughts, the maester turned, his eyes quickly finding the boy standing in the doorway. What would he do to him? Should he run?
Come, boy, Master Griven's voice echoed across the giant chamber. Come and meet our guest.
Still fearful of having been caught, Cyril obeyed. His desire to see the beast close up overshadowed his fear. As he approached, he noticed something he had not seen before. Great golden chains crossed the floor, attached to golden manacles that encircled the dragon's legs. This was no guest. This was a captive. The dragon's glowing eyes burned as if agreeing. Griven looked between them and then nodded as if approving of something unspoken.
His name is Nemanth.
Chapter 4.
What do you know of dragons?
Cyril could barely gather his wits to answer. He knew what the song said, that the mighty dragons could see the unseen and steal away magic. But those words were vague and came from legends and myths. Rather than say something wrong, he shook his head.
It's difficult to put into words what dragon magic can do, the maester said, looking up at the great beast beside him. Would you like to experience it? See with your own eyes what he sees.
At those words, Cyril tore his gaze away from the dragon Nemanth and looked to the maester Griven's face. The heat in the air and the sweat on his bald head made the designs seem to writhe like red snakes. Was he serious? Could Cyril really see such a thing for himself? Or was the maester taunting him? Learn, his father had said. Had this been what he'd meant? Had he known about the dragon? The idea of seeing such magic with his own eyes filled Cyril with excitement.
Truly?
Cyril whispered. His excitement was mirrored in Maester Griven's burning eyes.
Truly, I have perfected it.
His smile was dark and triumphant. He pointed to the gold manacles.
The gold contains the dragon's magic, he explained. It's malleable. It holds it captive.
He rubbed one hand across his head.
The Taytaos allow me to pull it in, to focus it.
To control it.
The unspoken words echoed in Cyril's head. He blinked. Had Maester Griven said that?
Come, I must make the connection.
One of the maester's skeletal hands clutched a gold manacle. The other beckoned the boy closer. Fear bloomed in Cyril's chest, filling him with a cold iciness that weighed him down like rock. Would it feel like the last time the maester had touched him? The agony of those probing fingers in his brain had nearly done him in. Griven's face darkened.
Choose, boy.
Cyril licked his lips nervously. He wanted to know. Truly he did.
Are you strong enough?
This time Cyril looked up. That was not the maester's voice. It was deeper, richer. It was liquid. He met the dragon's gaze, and a shiver worked through him. Before he could reconsider, before the fear could overcome him, he stepped forward and grasped the outstretched hand. There was a sizzle and a snap. For a moment, he was sure he saw the lick of flames travel across those strange designs, the Taytaos, and then the room disappeared. Everything was gone. No, he realized. Not gone, just different. Darker. He was higher up, looking down, seeing an echo of light, blue against black. Two shimmering forms connected. He realized he was looking at himself through the eyes of the dragon. Below, the glowing forms were he and Maester Griven. They pulsed. He could smell their breath.
Ida.
Ah, yes. The breath of life. The scent was familiar and wild. The magic in both of them was strong. One was creative and destructive. That was the captor, the usurper, the thief. That one thought he knew, but he was like a sightless bird blundering through the air, flying without seeing. The boy was different. The boy had destructive, but he also had the balance, the void, neutral. The boy could see.
Look, boy, look through my eyes and see your essence. Sniff through my nostrils and smell the breath of life. Open your inner self and see the magic.
The words thrummed through Cyril's soul.
Yes, the magic. It was like a current running wild. He could ride it. He could fly like...
His body jerked with a wrenching twist. He was being torn in half. A sickening pain flooded through him. He felt something hard knock the air from his lungs.
Yes, the return can be difficult until you get used to it.
Cyril looked up. What was he doing on the floor?
Could you see it?
Griven's eyes searched him.
Did you see it?
Saw it, felt it, smelled it. He nodded. Griven's feral grin filled him with loathing.
What did it look like?
He does not know.
A voice whispered in Cyril's head.
He has looked, but he is blind to it. He does not have what you have. He does not have the balance.
I was looking down,
Cyril mumbled, not wanting to give away just how much he had felt. He didn't want Griven to know the kind of connection that he shared with...
Nemanth.
The dragon.
Such power,
Griven hissed.
More than most imagine. It can be ours, ours to control, to use.
Thief.
Nemanth's anger was palpable. It rolled along the boy's skin. Cyril knew then that Nemanth hated Griven, hated the man who had trapped him and was using his power as if it were his own.
Would you like that, boy? Do you want to taste that power on your tongue every day?
His greedy eyes glowed.
Will you help me?
He tried to hide the suspicion that he felt. Help you what?
Release it, boy. Release the power.
He would kill us both,
Nemeth whispered in his mind.
Only you can give him the power to do what he wants. You are the key.
He was the key. He knew what he must do. Yes, he said softly. I'll help you to release it. Cyril's smile was grim. His father would be proud. He was learning. Chapter 5. Dinner was one of the strangest things yet. Appearing gleeful about Cyril's decision to help him, Griven had led the way upstairs and through one of the other mystery doors along the twisting hallway, revealing a heretofore unseen room dominated by an enormous table. The table's rich wood glowed red in the light from lanterns that were hung between heavy drapes, and the legs ended in carved dragon feet, replete with claws.
Sit, boy,
Griven said, sweeping his hand to indicate he didn't care where.
I'll check on our food.
He disappeared through another door in the far left corner. The smells that wafted in told Cyril that the food was indeed on its way. Who it might be making such delicious scents, he couldn't fathom. He had seen no one else since arriving, nor heard other footfalls. Perhaps there were more secrets to this odd structure. All he knew was that he was ravenous. As if in agreement, his stomach rumbled. He crossed to the other side of the table, the one nearest the wall. He was intrigued by the heavy drapes and pulled one back to peek behind it. There were no windows. Instead, strange drawings marked the walls. Drawn in something dark, they looked as though someone had used charred sticks from a fire as an instrument. The designs were patterns, with spokes moving outward from a central point, surrounded by circles and webs at such an intricate level of detail, he had to lean closer to make them out. For reasons he couldn't articulate, the drawings made him nervous. He let the curtain fall and moved to another, feeling his insides clench as he drew it aside. Like the first, the fabric concealed no window, only more of the odd markings. If anything, these were even more intricate than the others. The tiny spaces between the spokes and the circling lines filled with images so small he couldn't make them out, even when he narrowed his eyes. Again, the crawling sensation of nervousness filled him at the sight. Were these spells? Had Griven drawn them? If he had, why here, on the rock walls of the dining hall? And why were they hidden? Cyril heard footsteps approaching and quickly let the curtain fall back into place, rushing to sit in one of the heavy chairs. His heart pounded, and his palms were wet. Why? What was he afraid would happen? The door in the corner swung open, and a man carrying a heavy tray walked in, followed by a girl with a pitcher. Griven came in last, sitting at the head of the table, even though it was two chairs away from where Cyril had seated himself. The man and girl laid their burdens on the large table, then left as quickly as they had come. Other than a faint impression of their age, Cyril could barely even say what they had looked like. A moment later, Griven was lifting the lid away from the large tray, and all other thoughts and concerns were lost in the rich smell and dripping skin of the roasted meat in front of them. A strange feeling tore through Cyril's body. It was more than hunger. It was beyond craving. It was a need. He wanted to plunge his hands into the meat and devour it, rip it apart with his teeth, and swallow dripping chunks of it. His throat worked convulsively as he tried not to let the strange feeling show. Griven, however, appeared as lost as Cyril was. He grabbed two chunks of meat with his hand, using his knife to spear each one as he tore into it. The nature of it made Cyril's longing even greater. Unable to stand it any longer, he grabbed his own chunks. He didn't need a knife. He shoved the food into his mouth with his hands, pleased to find the meat still red and blood-filled beneath the darkened exterior. The flavors and scents filled him. Juices ran down his chin. He reached for more, needed more. If only he could have caught it himself, been free to hold it down and tear into the tender flesh while it still pulsed with life.
No!
He dropped the meat he'd been holding, staring at it in horror. His hands were covered in fat and blood. He wiped at his chin, horrified to find more of the same. What was he doing? These thoughts were not his own. He was acting like some kind of beast. Is that what I am? Nemanth. He shoved his chair away from the table, feeling suddenly sick and dizzy. Was that how it would be now? Would they forever be connected? He looked up to find Griven staring at him, his narrow eyes glowing, mouth pulled back in a pleased grin. He knew. Griven knew Cyril and the dragon were connected. Panic filled him. His heart thundered against his ribs. Did Griven sense it? Could he hear the thoughts that filled Cyril's mind?
He knows, but not fully.
Nemanth's liquid voice soothed.
He is not as we are.
Cyril stumbled away from the chair. He needed to get away from there. His stomach clenched angrily, yet the food did not come back up. His body wanted the meat, even if his mind didn't. The door on the other side of the room wavered as he stumbled toward it, and his feet felt heavy and uncoordinated. He nearly fell twice, but finally grasped the latch and pulled it open. He fled into the dark hallway, hearing soft laughter follow him. Griven. He leaned one hand against the rough stone wall to keep himself from falling and lurched toward the relative safety of his room. Once in it, he ripped away his clothes, using the material to scrub at his face and hands. He tossed them in a ball into a corner, then knelt before the chest, pushing back the lid. He dug through his clothes for something clean, something that smelled of home, and not this dungeon, this snake pit. He pulled on pants and a soft shirt his mother had made for him, and then his hands landed on the pair of balled-up socks near the bottom. The hard lump at one end told him that his treasure was still there, still safe. Greedily, he tore at the material, eager to have it in his hand. He dropped it into his palm, the heaviness of it pushing his hand down. It was cool against his hot skin, feeling like a balm.
Rivenstone.
So the dragon knew what it was.
Of course I know.
His response was immediate and offended.
I am not a fool. Besides, I am magic born. We know of such things.
Yes, of course he would. He would know how the Riven Stone worked, and also what Cyril was planning to do with it. More importantly, he would know why.
We are of like mind,
Nemanth agreed. Cyril rolled the small, dark, silver-colored stone between his fingers. It was heavy, but perfectly balanced. It shifted easily between his fingertips as he moved it from one to the next. As he moved it faster, the silver color began to glow. Faster and faster he shifted it, until the rock moved through the air almost of its own accord, and the light blurred into a solid, glowing line in the air. With his free hand, Cyril summoned his destructive magic. A ball of darkness rose above his palm, shifting and coalescing until it was a perfect sphere of midnight. They were both perfect. Cyril clapped his hands together sharply, striking the silver of the Riven Stone with the black, destructive magic. Lightning shot away in all directions, filling the room with an electrical charge that lifted his hair from his head. Then it dissipated, and with it, the weight of the web that had been cast over him. Immediately, his stomach settled and his heart returned to a normal rhythm. He heaved a great sigh, then shook his head. He should have known, should have suspected that Griven would not trust him so quickly or offer something so powerful without a catch. He'd only realized it when Griven had grinned at dinner, if you could call what they had done something so civil as dinner. Griven had not known what kind of connection would be made with the dragon, but he was no fool. He had cast a web spell over Cyril, trapping some of his thoughts and emotions, monitoring them. You're good, Cyril thought, his mind finally his own again. But I have some tricks of my own, old man. He tucked the Riven Stone back into its hiding place. He would have to be more careful from now on. The connection with Nemanth was temporarily broken as well, the Riven Stone doing its work completely, but he knew that would be easy enough to restore. They shared something Griven did not, and he could tap into it at any time. He was almost ready. Chapter 6
Sit still now,
Griven said, his tone clipped and humorless. He sensed it. He could feel that he'd lost his hold on his acolyte, but he didn't know how. Cyril fought to hold back a triumphant smile. Griven might suspect, but he could never truly guess. Rivenstones were extraordinarily rare. There were only a handful in existence as far as anyone knew. After all, it was unusual enough for people to travel through the divide, let alone a stone, but then for someone to find it and recognize it for what it was? Even his father had never suspected such a thing, especially from Cyril's mother. She had pressed it into her son's hand on the night before his 10th year began.
I know not when you will need this, she whispered into his ear, leaning over him in the darkness. But need it you will.
Her breath had been a tickle on his face.
She's seen it.
She, the seer, the woman father had forbidden her to visit. Oh, how furious he would be if he knew.
You'll keep our secret, won't you?
He'd heard the sadness in her voice, and the fear. He'd nodded then, accepting her gift and her secret. He hadn't realized yet what it could do, that small, heavy stone, but it was a gift, the only one he'd ever gotten. He was loath to give it up. Later, when she'd explained how it worked, he was glad he'd kept it. Later still, when he'd first had need of it, he was even gladder. No, Griven might sense that he'd lost his web of power, but he could not know how. Perhaps he thought that somehow Cyril was strong enough to break it on his own. If so, that was good. Let him be nervous. The razor-sharp edge of the long blade slid along Cyril's skin, Griven's hand steady and sure. Cyril felt the soft sigh of movement as a swath of hair slid down his bare shoulders and onto the floor. Dark hair, he saw, with only a hint of his father's red. Good. His father had no place here. Not in this. It only took a few minutes to shave away the hair, leaving his head as bald as Griven's. Next came the Taytows. Griven had ground some kind of red rock into a powder, adding other powders from small glass jars and vials, and then a drop of shining liquid. He stirred it all into a paste, dipping in a small brush and dragging it along the freshly shaved skin. A shiver rippled over Cyril, though whether it was from the paste or something more, he didn't know.
The Taytows will allow the use of your neutral as a conductor,
Griven had explained,
to infuse the magic into the ring.
A gold ring, as it turned out, that Griven had already prepared with spells ready to capture and contain, ready to be filled with dragon magic.
And your own, Nemeth cautioned. He will do more than use your magic for this fusion. The circle to represent unending magic, the gold to contain my own, and the pairing of our balance and our breath of life to complete it. He will weave your essence with my own into the very soul of this object, man with beast, merged.
Can it hurt us?
Cyril sent his question silently.
Only in that one moment, when he holds the power between us and the ring, as he draws from us both, we will be vulnerable.
He hated that word, Cyril could tell. A creature as mighty as a dragon must loathe feeling vulnerable. And after? Cyril asked.
Once it is done, it is done. The ring will contain the power, but we will be restored.
The ring would contain the power. Just the idea of it thrilled him.
He must not be allowed to have it, even to touch it. Once it is complete, it will carry the combined power of us both, stronger than either.
No, he must not be allowed to have it, Cyril agreed. He had opened his thoughts completely to Nemeth, and now the bond between them was uncluttered by Griven's clumsy intrusion. It was stronger than anything he'd known before.
What will you do with it?
The ring? I will hide it where Griven can never reach it.
Between worlds. Good,
Nemeth approved. There was a pause. Then,
what will you do with him?
Cyril felt a slow smile spread across his face.
Nothing. I will leave him for you.
The feelings that filled him then were not his own. Nemeth's pleasure, his anger, his fury at being held captive for so long, his desire for retribution of the theft of his power by Griven was so strong it was overwhelming. Cyril felt himself wobble and nearly fall from the chair.
"Be still," Griven hissed. "The forms must be exact."
With force, Cyril pushed Nemeth's feelings to the back of his mind. The forms must be exact. He didn't want anything to go wrong. Not now. Not when they were so close. And when it was all over, he would return home and show his father exactly what he'd learned. Chapter 7.
"It's time."
A pressure filled Cyril's chest. He wasn't sure what it was at first. Dread, excitement, fear, anticipation. It felt as though his whole life had led him to this exact moment.
"Don't worry,"
Griven said, misinterpreting his hesitation.
"It's no worse than what you felt the other day."
His dark eyes burned.
"And when it's done, you will be witness to the true power of the dragon."
"He means to use it on you first," Nemeth said.
But Cyril had already known that. It didn't take much of a leap to figure out why Griven had needed an acolyte, or why he'd paid so handsomely for one. How much, the boy wondered, had it taken for his father to sell his only son?
"Are you ready?"
He opened his mouth to form the word, to affirm his commitment to the plan, but at that moment a pounding echoed through the hall. Both turned to look toward the front room. Who could it be? Who would visit this alien and profane place? There was a reason it looked as if it had been heaved up from the bowels of the earth, a reason it looked as if it had been melted and reformed. Griven was destructive first, but he was also creative. His unholy creation mirrored his blasphemous heart.
"Go and see who it is,"
Griven hissed, shoving him toward the door.
"Send them away. I have work to do."
And with that, he disappeared through the doorway, down into the depths of his lair. Cyril walked slowly into the front room. His mouth was dry. His heart beat like a rabbit's. He gripped the bar that secured the door, his hand closing over it on the far end. All he had to do was push it down. The counterbalance would lift the other end and clear the latch, allowing the door to swing open. It was just another way Griven used clever deceptions to impress and intimidate. The knock came again, startling him. Whoever it was, they weren't going away. This was stupid. Why was he afraid? He had nothing to fear. Not now, and soon enough, not ever again. Annoyed, he pushed down on the bar. The door swung open. He paused in the shadow of it, but no one came in. Grinding his teeth together, he moved into the doorway. The light of the sun nearly blinded him. He threw a hand up over his face. Not even a week he'd been here, and already he was like a cave dweller. The sun threw a swath of light into the room, as if sniffing out an adversary. Cyril took an uneasy step backward. Standing outside the door, framed by the sun, there was a figure. His face was invisible, the glare a halo of brightness around him. Cyril squinted, ducking his head and turning it to try to get a glimpse of the stranger. "Who is it?" he asked. "What do you want?" "Cyril?" he gasped, the use of his own name striking him like a hammer on a string, sending reverberations through his entire being. He licked his lips and tried to swallow, but his mouth was too dry.
"Who are you?"
he whispered.
"I am called by many names," the man answered.
What kind of answer was that?
"Why are you here?"
The man's face began to appear amidst the bright light, Cyril's eyes slowly adjusting enough to see. The face was strange, and it was twisted and pulled.
"Your mother sent me."
The words rocked him. His mother? How did she know this man? Why would she send him? Did she know somehow? Despite what his father said, she had always seemed like the stronger one. She knew things no one else did. For this man to show up now, it could be no coincidence. He stared into the twisted face. The eyes were pulled in such a way that they looked sad, yet the mouth smiled. It was scars, he realized. His face was twisted with scars.
"Why are you here?"
he asked again. Only this time it meant so much more.
You must choose,
the scarred man said softly. Cyril wanted to protest. He wanted to claim he had no idea what the strange, crazy man was talking about, but he would be lying. He knew. This man, this stranger covered in scars, was more than he seemed. He was Wardeen, those of legend sent to guard and protect people in need. Cyril had always thought it no more than legend, yet as he stared into the man's face, he knew it was not. This man was a traveler of the High King, sent to offer him pardon. Like the bar on the door, his life was balanced on a fulcrum. In this one moment, it could still swing either way. He could go home to his mother, his bed, and the fields of tall grasses on the plains. He could walk away from Griven and his dark schemes. He could walk away from Nemanth. He could even find another place, a place where he could start again without the veil of darkness hanging over him that this place had created. He could wash away the stain that covered him. This man, the Wardeen, was giving him what his father had refused to let him have. A choice. Right now, in this moment, Cyril could choose who he would become. He could choose the light or embrace the darkness. He was young and he was strong, stronger than he'd ever realized, stronger than his father had been willing to believe. He'd wagered money on it, and he'd been wrong. His son was as strong as a dragon. Below his feet, the floor vibrated. Nemanth waited. The power waited. Griven would make his ring. The Ouroboros, he called it. The dragon between worlds, born of neutral magic. It would be a ring imbued with all the power of a dragon, but also more. It would contain a piece of Cyril's Ida, the essence of who he was. The two combined would create such power as he could only imagine. Choose, the man said again. His voice had the ring of finality. The sun had lowered. Soon it would touch the edge of the world and disappear. If he left, if he walked away, he would never know the kind of power that awaited him below, in the bowels of this place. He might learn magic and become a maester himself, but he would lose Nemanth. He would lose his chance. He would never feel the power of a dragon thrum through his veins.
Choose,
Nemanth whispered into his mind. That liquid voice filled him with a coolness that was like a deep river flowing over and through him. The plan was so simple, really. Almost too easy. Nemanth hated Griven. He hated the man who had chained him in this abomination of a place for so many years, using him at will like a hammer and nails. Griven must never be allowed to touch the ring. Keeping it from him would be easy. Cyril wouldn't have to kill him. All he needed to do was let Nemanth loose, unlock the manacles, free the dragon. Nemanth would take care of Griven, and then the power of the ring in all of its dark glory would be his to do with as he would. The blended magic of man and dragon, contained in a single band of gold, would belong to him. Cyril looked back into the scarred face of the Wardeen, framed by the setting sun. The twisted lips were turned down, his eyes sad. They pleaded with Cyril to change his mind, but he could not. There had never really been a choice. Not for him. His life had led him here. This was his destiny, and he was going to grab it with both hands. He was going to ride the dark wind. Slowly but firmly, Cyril closed the door, shutting out the light.
I hope you enjoyed listening to The Dragon Between Worlds by T.E. Bradford, narrated by Peter Franson of Christian Geek Central. If you want to read more by Tracy, go to tebradford.com to find more of her books, or you can follow her on Amazon to keep up with new books she has coming out. I have the direct links for both in the show notes. If you enjoyed listening to Peter narrate the story, you might also enjoy listening to his audio dramas at spiritblade.com. Or his podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. This month, we are running a new giveaway, and instead of doing my normal audiobook giveaway, We're celebrating the end of Season 2 with books and prizes from authors we've featured on the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast. 13 of our authors pitched in with 6 ebooks, 10 paperbacks, and an audiobook, plus some bookmarks and other bookish swag. One winner will take home all $230 worth. So if you want a chance to win, go to findingfantasyreads.com/giveaway to enter. As always, you can find every link I mentioned in the show notes. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.